This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Friday, September 7th, 2018. Coming up this hour.
Investors await the latest word on U.S.-China trade tensions while NAFTA talks resume.
Emerging market assets stabilize after equities enter a bear market.
We get the U.S. jobs report for August, plus remarks from Fed officials.
And there appears to be more trouble brewing for Tesla CEO Elon Musk.
President Trump says the anonymous Times op-ed may actually work to his advantage.
I think it's backfired.
And the New York Attorney General subpoenas every Catholic diocese in the state. I'm John Tucker. Those stories straight ahead.
I'm Rob Bushka. Ahead in sports, Serena Williams back in the finals, Tiger blisters the course, and another NFL season is underway.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Happy Friday and good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures are slightly lower and investors await the latest moves on trade. It is coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 4.5 points now. Dow futures down 55. NASDAQ futures down 16. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. CAC in Paris up about 0.1%. And the FTSE 100 is down 0.3%. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 0.8%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was little changed. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 2.88%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.64%. NYMEX crude oil, little change at $67.78 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.2% or $2.20 at $1,206.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.1643, and the yen, 110.71. Bob.
Trade tensions are about to kick into high gear. President Trump could announce plans to slap tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese goods as soon as today. And China stands ready to respond with levies of its own. Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie reports from Beijing.
If they follow through with their threats to retaliate on $60 billion worth of U.S. goods, then you're looking at a total of $110 billion worth of U.S. goods that will be targeted by China. They're going to be targeting some niche consumer items, but also industrial products. So the industrial sector here will feel the squeeze. And of course, what China is also doing is building out its response, its support mechanisms to try and shore up some of the companies that are being impacted. And you only need to look at a province like Guangdong, which, by the way, has an economy larger than that of Mexico, where you see the manufacturing sector there. It is in contraction. Export numbers are falling, jobs are being cut. So the pain is being felt even before these additional potential tariffs from President Trump.
Stocks in Asia, meantime, fell again today to finish up their worst week since March.
When it comes to NAFTA talks, an agreement doesn't look likely today. A Canadian government official tells Bloomberg talks have been upbeat but are not expected to lead to a deal this week. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland will not work through the weekend because Lighthizer is traveling to Brussels.
There's a report suggesting the U.S. could soon pick a trade fight with Japan. According to an op-ed from Wall Street Journal editor James Freeman, President Trump is bothered by the terms of U.S. trade with Japan. The remarks from Mr. Trump reportedly came in a phone call he placed to Freeman after the journalist touted the president's tax and regulatory reform efforts.
Emerging market assets appear to be stabilizing this morning after EM stocks officially entered a bear market and investors are bracing more for more pain ahead. Alex Nicholson covers emerging markets for Bloomberg.
There are some very big events coming down the line. You've got non-farm payrolls in the U.S. later today. That's a monster data point that could really make the weather for emerging markets, given what it tells us about the trajectory of interest rates. And then, of course, on Monday, the Turkish Central Bank will unveil its plan for supporting the lira. Is it going to be a rate hike? If it is, then how big? Traders have had a full week to ponder what form it might take. So there's lots of room to disappoint. And let's also remember that Turkey's policy problems are at least part of the reason for the current downturn in emerging markets.
The MSCI Emerging Markets Index of stocks is higher this morning, snapping 7 straight days of declines.
And we get that monthly U.S. payroll report at 8:30 this morning, Wall Street time, with economists forecasting a gain of 191,000 jobs in August. Michael McKee has more from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The consensus for another strong month of job growth wobbled a bit with yesterday's weak ADP report, but the lowest jobless claims figure since December 1969 shored up the view that if U.S. growth is peaking, it's not showing up in the payrolls figures. Analysts still see August producing the lowest unemployment rate since that same year, 1969. The question for the Fed, however, and thus for Wall Street, is whether such a tight labor market will finally produce outsized wage gains that may feed into inflation. Once again, that's not the forecast, which means a strong August may cement a Fed rate increase this month, but investors will probably retain doubts about another hike this year. In Washington, Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Michael, thank you. We also get remarks from Fed officials today following the release of that jobs report. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger has details.
The Boston Fed is hosting a two-day conference on the long-term consequences of low interest rates. Boston Fed President Eric Rosengrant is scheduled to speak today and tomorrow. Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester will moderate a panel discussion in Boston today on a reality check from the markets. The Federal Reserve Banks of Dallas and Kansas City are jointly hosting a conference in Dallas on energy and the economy. Dallas Fed President Rob Kaplan will be speaking there today. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Jeff. On the corporate front, there's more trouble for Tesla, with Citron Research founder Andrew Left suing the company. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett reports.
In his lawsuit, Left seeks to represent a class of investors who traded Tesla shares from August 7th to the 17th. The suit cites Musk's long-standing public feud with short sellers, claiming he manipulated the price of Tesla securities by issuing false and misleading information. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Charlie, thank you. Shares of Tesla are also lower this morning after Elon Musk appeared on a popular podcast. Musk sipped whiskey and smoked pot on California comedian Joe Rogan's podcast. The Tesla CEO took one drag from a joint containing tobacco mixed with marijuana, which is legal in California. It was Musk's first appearance in a public forum since his short-lived effort to take the electric car maker private. Tesla shares are down about 1% in early trading.
And shares of Deutsche Bank are down more than 1%. Sources tell Bloomberg the firm's largest investor, HNA Group, plans to exit its entire stake in Deutsche Bank. It's not clear over what time period HNA would sell the stake, which it controls through a series of complex derivatives.
And futures this morning are lower, with S&P futures down 3.5 points, Dow futures down 51, NASDAQ futures are down 13, and the 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.88%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. That brings us to 5:07 on Wall Street. Denials from the cabinet. It wasn't me. Wasn't me, and it wasn't me. Here's Bloomberg's John Tucker with the very latest, John.
And good morning, Bob. He may face resistance from within, but Republicans close to President Trump are giving him plenty of public support in the wake of that unsigned New York Times opinion piece. Bloomberg's Nathan Hager reports from Washington.
Vice President Mike Pence says the senior administration official who wrote about restraining the president's worst impulses should resign.
Anyone who would write an anonymous editorial smearing this president, who's provided extraordinary leadership to this country, should not be working for this administration.
More than a half dozen cabinet secretaries have issued statements denying writing the piece. First Lady Melania Trump says whoever did isn't helping the country, but sabotaging it. In Washington, I'm Nathan Hager, Bloomberg Daybreak.
President Trump walked to a cheering crowd in Billings, Montana last night while urging them to vote Republican. He took aim at the New York Times for printing the op-ed piece. He told the crowd it may actually work to his advantage.
Unelected deep state operatives who defy the voters to push their own secret agendas are truly a threat to democracy itself. And I was so heartened when I looked. I think it's backfired.
And Capitol Police say they've charged 69 people with unlawfully demonstrating during Brett Kavanaugh's second day of testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Kavanaugh testified he hasn't had any inappropriate conversations with anyone about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe. The New York State Attorney General has subpoenaed all 8 of the state's Catholic dioceses for any and all documents on allegations and payments to victims of sex abuse. Church leaders did confirm Attorney General Barbara Underwood's civil investigation. Steve Jimenez is an abuse survivor and an advocate.
What has taken these people so long? I mean, you're talking about sex crimes against children.
And actor Burt Reynolds has died, the leading man known for movies like Smokey and the Bandit and Boogie Nights. His breakout hit was the controversial 1972 classic Deliverance.
You don't beat it. Don't beat this river.
Reynolds was 82. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Bob.
Thank you, John. It is now 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Investors Bank. And good morning to you, Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Bob. The U.S. Open will have a familiar feel for the women's final on Saturday when Serena Williams battles 20-year-old Naomi Osaka from Japan, who ousted American Madison Keys. It's the first trip to the finals for Williams since 2014.
I felt like, you know, I needed to get to the net a little bit more. And, you know, I know how to play at the net. And I have great volleys, or else I wouldn't have won so many Grand Slam doubles titles. So I know how to do it. It's just the fact of turning it on and actually doing it, and somehow it worked today. I actually did it, and I've been training on it and practicing it, and it came together.
Osaka's the first Japanese woman to make a Grand Slam final, and for Serena, she's one win away from her seventh U.S. Open title. Men's action, Rafael Nadal faces Juan Martin Del Potro at 4, followed by Novak Djokovic at 7. NFL kicked off its season in Philadelphia with the Eagles playing a backup quarterback, so they left it to the running game.
He gets the snap. He spins left, hands off to Ajayi. Got a block from the left tackle, the 10, the 5, breaks a tackle, drives into the end zone. Touchdown, Philadelphia!
Westwood won on the call, 18-12, the final over the Falcons. The Eagles' defense overcame a monstrous game from Falcons wide receiver Julio Jones. He had 10 grabs for 159 yards. Giants host the Jags on Sunday, while the Jets play Monday night in Detroit. Golf, Tiger torched the opening round of the BMW Championship with his best round of the year, a 62. Tiger shot 29 on the front nine. He's tied atop the leaderboard with Rory McIlroy. Yankees visit Seattle tonight at 10. Masahiro Tanaka faces James Paxton. Red Sox have their hands full with the Astros. The Mets host the Phillies and their young star, Aaron Nola. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob?
Thanks, Rob Buschka. Please join us tonight for Bloomberg Business of Sports. We'll speak to former pro boxer and current promoter Oscar De La Hoya tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. on Bloomberg Radio, or download our Apple podcast on iTunes. S&P futures down 3 points, a tenth of 1%. This is Bloomberg. And the sports update brought to you by Investors Bank. Business wins here. Connect your team with the experts at Investors Bank for business solutions to move your business forward. Investors Bank, banking in your best interest. Member FDIC.
Bloom. Global News, 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Today we are watching for the August jobs report at 8:30 Wall Street time. Meanwhile, U.S. futures and European equities are lower after stocks in Asia posted their worst week since March. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally reports from Singapore.
Karen, the MSCI Asia Pacific Index closed in the red for a seventh session, its longest losing streak since December, while the Japanese yen headed for its biggest two-day gain since July. The yen was boosted after a Wall Street Journal report that President Trump may turn his sights on trade to Japan. That strength weighed on the Nikkei 225, which closed lower by 0.8% to 22,307 points in Tokyo, a sixth session of losses. Equities in mainland China fluctuated as a comment period on President Trump's proposed tariffs on an additional $200 billion worth of goods in China ended. The CSI 300 actually ended up closing higher, its first win in three sessions. Tech stocks dragged on the TAIEX, while stocks in Jakarta showed a bit more upside in the wake of big losses earlier in the week. BlackRock now saying it is bullish on Indonesian stocks despite the wave of caution lingering over EM. In Singapore, Juliet Salih, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. S&P futures are down a point now. Dow futures down 25. NASDAQ futures down 6. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%. And the 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.88%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.64%. NYMEX crude oil down 4 cents. Little change at $67.73 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1%, or $1.40 to $12.05.70 an ounce. The euro, $1.1648. The yen, 110.82. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Karen. President Donald Trump's top lieutenants are stepping forward to declare not me after that anonymous New York Times column. The spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry is calling a summit today on Syria between Iran, Turkey, and Russia an invaluable opportunity. And after two marathon days in a witness chair in the Senate hearing room, Brett Kavanaugh appears to be on the path to confirmation as a Supreme Court justice. Bloomberg Sports. NFL season kicked off with a Super Bowl champion Eagles beating the Falcons 18-12. And it will be Serena Williams against Naomi Osaka at the U.S. Open women's final tomorrow. In baseball, the Nationals lose in extra innings. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Bob.
Thank you, John. It is now 5:20 on Wall Street. We're joined by Aaron Brown, head of asset allocation at UBS Asset Management. Time to get some answers that we'd rather not have to worry about to a question we have to ask. What could possibly go wrong? Yes, the trend in global economic growth remains encouraging, and it seems stocks march ever higher. So what are the principal risks? Aaron Brown, good morning and welcome. What are you keeping in your sights as possibly disruptive to U.S. markets?
Yeah, so we see a lot of near-term risks on the horizon, particularly going into, you know, the next few months ahead of the midterm elections. You know, clearly top of mind for investors right now are the potential for more trade tariffs enacted against China, as well as against now Japan we have in our sights, and we still have the lingering, you know, question mark about NAFTA negotiations, which at least as of overnight, President Trump seemed to be moving in the right direction. But tariffs, I think, has the greatest potential in the very short term to shave returns off investor portfolios. I think also, though, in the background, we continue to have tensions in Europe with the budget negotiations, which are starting to take shape in the next month. And then clearly there's risk out of China as well. You know, we've seen a fairly significant retracement in some of the growth indicators in China over the last few months. They're now starting to, you know, turn on the taps with respect to stimulus, but the question mark remains is how will that really evolve over the next few months? There's probably going to be continued data weakness until we start to see that stimulus take effect late this year or early next year. And so I think that also poses a risk to investors. So there's a lot of risk that we see on the horizon. I think that's what's been holding back the returns that we would have expected and creating a lot of the volatility in market. But we also see, I think, pretty attractive opportunities now for investors that are willing to be patient, that don't potentially have to take mark-to-market risk in their portfolios, and that could start to look at value in the market, you know, particularly in the emerging market space.
Attractive opportunities, yes, but it just seems to me the list goes on and on. We have that potential collision course between Italy and the EU. We're looking at the possibility that the Fed may change things up if interest rates rise, that sort of thing. Investors do seem to have quite a bit of worry on their list.
We're less concerned about the Fed right now. We actually think that the Fed is on a fairly steady path that they've communicated pretty broadly to the market already. And we think that the risk is that they slow down rather than they speed up, and particularly around the balance sheet, that they could potentially end the balance sheet buying sooner rather than later and sooner than the market is potentially expecting. So we actually see into 2019 that being a potential positive catalyst for the market. But certainly the biggest risk that we see out there right now are trade tariffs. And that's what we think has impacted the market and our portfolios the most.
So you think that the markets can withstand these rate increases that the Fed is putting in front of us?
Yes, I think absolutely. We're really approaching what the neutral rate is with respect to the Fed policy. And I think that's going to be much more a debate for 2019 than it is today. But that potentially could cap or slow the rate rises next year. We expect that the Fed will raise rates in September. We don't think that that's really a risk out there in the market. Today's employment report should substantiate that view. And we also think that they're likely to hike again in December of this year. Really, the battleground for the Fed in terms of rate hikes is going to come in 2019 with the discussion about, A, what happens with respect to their balance sheet, and B, whether or not they continue to hike through neutral.
So just to clarify, you're not saying that the Fed is going to slow down. You're saying that's always a possibility.
Right. I think that the risk is to the downside, that the risk is that they slow down rather than speed up.
Aaron Brown is head of asset allocation at UBS Asset Management. Thank you very much for your insights this morning. And let's take a forward look at the markets now. S&P futures down a single point, less than a tenth of 1%. Dow futures have carved off 21 points, less than a tenth of 1%. NASDAQ futures are down by 5 points. 10-year Treasury prices down 3/32. The yield up to 2.8840%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg Radio. Daybreak brought to you by the 2018 Range Rover Velar. It brings together elegance and innovation like you've never seen before. Visit your local tri-state area Land Rover retailer for special offers. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's catch up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are lower as investors await the latest word on trade and key payroll data. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index fell for a seventh session. That's its longest losing streak since December. Emerging market equities are higher, snapping 7 days of declines.
A NAFTA deal doesn't look likely today. A Canadian government official tells us talks between the U.S. and Canada have seemed upbeat but are not expected to lead to a deal this week.
The deadline for public comment on proposed U.S. tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese imports came and went without any fresh announcement from Washington.
China's foreign currency holdings dropped slightly last month. Reserves declined by $8.2 billion to $3.1 trillion in August.
As for the jobs report, it comes out in 3 hours from now. Economists forecasting a gain of 191,000 jobs in August. We get more from Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice.
August's anticipated gain would top July's somewhat lethargic 157,000, the smallest increase since March. Bloomberg Economics says robust growth will continue to propel job gains through the end of the year. Jobless claims, for example, are the lowest since 1969. Bloomberg Economics also says fallout from the trade war will probably remain minimal, at least in today's report. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. Shares of Broadcom rose 3% in extended trading. The chipmaker's quarterly sales forecast topped estimates on strong demand for data center semiconductors.
The parent company of British Airways, IAG, is down about 3%. The airline revealed that hackers made off with customer credit card data from 380,000 transactions.
Sources tell Bloomberg that Deutsche Bank's largest investor, China's HNA Group, plans to exit its entire stake in the German lender. Shares of Deutsche Bank are down 1%.
And activist investor Daniel Loeb will reportedly launch a proxy fight to replace the entire board at Campbell Soup. The Wall Street Journal says Loeb is unconvinced by the company's plans to sell 2 units.
And futures this morning are lower. S&P futures down 3 points. Dow futures down 39. NASDAQ futures down 11. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. CAC in Paris is little change. FTSE 100 down 0.3%. 10-year Treasury down 2/32. Yield 2.88%. The yield on the 2-year 2.64%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.1% or 9 cents to $67.85 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.1%, up $1.60 to $12.0590 an ounce. Checking currencies, the euro is at $1.1644, the British pound $1.2936. And the yen at 110.77. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. That brings us to 5:33 on Wall Street. Denials from inside the Trump administration. Bloomberg's John Tucker with that story and more now. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. President Donald Trump's top lieutenant stepped forward to declare, "Not me," after that anonymous New York Times column. There were denials from the office of the Vice President, Mike Pence, from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and from the Director of National Intelligence and many others. President Trump walked out to a cheering crowd in Billings, Montana last night while urging them to vote Republican. He also took aim at the New York Times for printing that anonymous op-ed piece.
The latest act of resistance is the op-ed published in the failing New York Times by an anonymous, really an anonymous, gutless coward.
New fireworks on day three of the hearing for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Senator Kamala Harris from California demanded to know if he had ever discussed special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into the Russian interference with Mr. Trump's private attorney.
The subject of the question is you and whether you were part of a conversation regarding special counsel Mueller's investigation.
The answer is no.
Thank you.
Democrats need Republicans to block Kavanaugh. There's no sign of that. In fact, they're on the verge of losing moderate Democrat Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota. Both say they see nothing in these hearings that would disqualify Brett Kavanaugh. Russia, Turkey, and Iran meet today to discuss the situation in Syria. Bloomberg's Simon Demirkan has details from Istanbul.
A summit bringing together the leaders of Turkey, Russia, and Iran. Their aim to contain a potentially catastrophic offensive in Idlib, Syria. For Ankara, a battle that would result in Syrian President Assad's forces recapturing Idlib might push another influx of refugees towards Turkey. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan could also order his military into action as a precautionary measure if he felt there was any threat to Turkey. In Istanbul, Simin Demirkan, Bloomberg Daybreak.
As the 17th anniversary of the September 11 attacks nears, the New York City Fire Department mourned the more than dozen firefighters who died in the past year of 9/11-related injuries.
Loss of life for our department on September 11th was staggering. But so, too, is seeing this list of heroes grow each year.
Fire Commissioner Dan Nigro added the 18 names to the FDNY Memorial Wall days before the 17th anniversary of the attacks. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Bob.
John, thank you. That brings us to 5:35. Coming up on 5:36 on Wall Street, that is time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Investors Bank. And good morning, Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Bob. Serena Williams on the verge of making history. She advanced to the finals of the U.S. Open despite dropping the first two games in just 6 minutes to Anastasia Sevastova.
This is just the beginning of my return. I'm still on the way up. There's still much more that I plan on doing. You don't reach your best, you know, a couple months in, and that's kind of where I am now. There's a lot of growth to still go in my game, and that's actually the most exciting part.
Williams rallied and finds herself in search of her 24th Grand Slam title, which would tie her for the most all-time with Margaret Court. She'll face 20-year-old Naomi Osaka from Japan on Saturday, who ousted American Madison Keys. NFL kicked off its season and honored the world champion Eagles with a weather delay of 45 minutes, but saw their fans get rewarded with an 18-12 win over the Falcons. Quarterback Nick Foles.
Just continue to keep working, one play at a time. This game's not easy. Winning in the NFL is not easy. Especially against a team like Atlanta. So it's just no one freak out. Everyone take it easy. Like, we keep looking at the pictures. We keep talking about the plays. We go out there and we execute. We stay calm in the huddle, and the guys did a great job.
The Eagles' defense held firm despite a huge game from Atlanta wideout Julio Jones. He had 10 catches for 169 yards in the loss. Giants host the Jags Sunday while the Jets visit the Lions for Monday Night Football. Golf and old-fashioned leaderboard saw Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy shoot an opening round 62 at the BMW Championship from Newton Square, Pennsylvania. They're atop the leaderboard with a one-stroke lead. Baseball: Yankees continue their West Coast trip tonight in Seattle. They visit the Mariners at 10. James Paxton hosts Masahiro Tanaka. Red Sox put up Houston while the Mets entertain the Phillies and their young star Aaron Nola on the mound. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob.
Rob Bushka, thank you very much. Now 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. It's a special issue on how innovation and technology promises to transform America's cities. Also in this week's issue, China's ambitions to become a global superpower. Mark Champion wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
They don't want to be the U.S. They insist that they don't want to be the next global hegemon. They simply don't want to replace the U.S. And yet, there's only one yardstick out there at the moment to measure yourself as a great power, and that is the U.S. So they find themselves doing it anyhow.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. Now 5:38 on Wall Street. That is time for your Tri-State Business Report and our Friday check-in today with Bloomberg's Martin DeCaro. Good morning.
Morning, Bob. With New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy renewing his push to raise the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour, a leading trade group is asking him to consider the potential consequences. The New Jersey Business and Industry Association says it could hurt small businesses, may have to cut staff, hours, or benefits in order to absorb the increase. The governor has conceded a higher minimum wage would have to be phased in. Currently in New Jersey, it's $8.60 an hour. Glamping has arrived in New York. Business Insider reports people are dishing out $700 a night to go luxury camping. It's called glamping in very nice tents on Governor's Island in New York Harbor. With the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report, I'm Martin DeCaro. Back to you, Bob.
Martin, thank you. It is now 5:39 on Wall Street. We check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Papa John's founder John Schnatter is accusing the chain's CEO of plotting to oust him.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, I'm reporting on a strong quarter from retailer Five Below and a boost to its outlook.
I'm Naira Chahich on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following IAG's stock price after British Airways said 380,000 payments were breached by hackers.
I'm Patrice Sikora, and for WTVN in Columbus, Ohio, I'm reporting Ohio-based Owens, Illinois is seeing demand surge for its glass containers as plastic packaging comes under attack.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. We're talking about how big banks are using new perks and quirks to keep their branches alive.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WCCO in Minneapolis, I'm talking about Cargill, exploring options for its malt unit in a deal that could value the business at more than $1 billion.
Thank you all. Those are some of the stories we're working on this morning around the world. S&P futures down 4 points. This is Bloomberg. And we look ahead on the weekend edition of Bloomberg Daybreak, where we set you up for the coming week on Wall Street. Listen in tomorrow at 5 a.m., again at 4 p.m., and Sunday mornings at 9 on Bloomberg Radio.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Today we are watching for the August jobs report at 8:30 Wall Street time. Meanwhile, U.S. stock index futures are moving lower this morning. S&P futures are down 4.5 points. Dow futures down 54. NASDAQ futures down about 16. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.33%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.88%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.64%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.1% or 9 cents to $67.86 a barrel. COMEX gold is up about 0.1% of 90 cents to $12.05.20 an ounce. The euro, $1.1644, the yen 110.75. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
And good morning, Karen. President Trump says in a Fox News interview that will air this morning, the New York Times came close to committing treason by publishing that anonymous op-ed. Judge Brett Kavanaugh sidestepped Democratic efforts to pin him down on abortion and the investigations of President Trump as the Supreme Court nominee ended his 2 days of questioning by a Senate panel. And actor Burt Reynolds, who flaunted his macho good looks in a Cosmopolitan centerfold, high-profile romances, and a string of hit movies, died of cardiac arrest. He was 82. Sports. NFL season kicked off with the Super Bowl champ Eagles beating the Falcons 18-12. And it will be Serena Williams against Naomi Osaka at the U.S. Open Women's Final tomorrow. Baseball, the Nationals lose in extra innings. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Bob.
John, thank you very much. It is coming up on 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. We are joined live this morning by Edward Evans, Bloomberg Opinion editor in our London bureau. Ed, good morning. Glad to have you with us. David Fickling basically writes, "Don't look now, but that global trade slowdown is happening now. It's arrived, huh?"
As the tariffs pile up, the world economy is starting to look very much holed below the waterline. One of the paradoxes of all the trade tensions this year is that in many parts of the world, it doesn't yet feel like a crisis. For all the turmoil in emerging markets, equity investors in major markets seem well, almost relaxed. Look at the S&P closing at a record on earlier at the end of last month. Now, Trump expected to start implementing the latest round of tariffs on Chinese goods imminently. It's tempting to think that the global economy is riding out all the turmoil. Tempting, but mistaken. Look closely, and the slowdown has already begun. Two metrics for you. Look at trade volumes. It's been extraordinarily unusual for the momentum of global commerce to head anywhere but up in recent decades. The only occasions when the World Trade Monitor has turned down in a sustained way since 2000 has been on the eve of the 2001 and 2008 recessions and during the 2015 commodity slump. And now you can add 2018 to that list, the index coming in negative throughout the second quarter of this year. And what's striking here is the weakness is coming not from commodities, not from materials, but from manufactured goods as global supply chains seize up. Now, the fact that previous trade slumps has often coincided with US recessions doesn't mean the coming one will. But as Sri Kumar has written for Bloomberg Opinion earlier in this year, markets have a very poor track record of picking up on the risks from rising trade barriers in advance. One other metric to look at. Look at the way that the world's container shipping lines are planning for the future. Order books that ran in excess of 1,000 vessels before the 2000 financial crisis haven't cracked 200 since Trump came to power. If the global economy is going to ride out this latest round of tension, the merchant fleets on which trade depends aren't actually seeing it.
I hear a bit of a link developing here. Marcus Ashworth has a column that suggests in the emerging market storm, look to Russia.
Yes, Russia has been caught up by the outgoing tide of the emerging market currency crisis. The ruble is down almost 17% against the dollar this year, hit a 2.5-year low on Thursday. That was after Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev urged the central bank to cut interest rates. Now, traders are hypersensitive to government interference in the independence of central banks. You just have to look at Turkey to see that. But further declines in the ruble look far from certain. Russia has much stronger defences than many of its emerging market peers. And if needed, the central bank could still wield the biggest stick of all in the form of an interest rate hike. Now, the prospect of sanctions, that's been around all year. But while several of these measures have been applied, and more may be coming, they've only had a limited effect on the economy. Unless these restrictions are extended to government debt, something the US hasn't done so far, Russia's economy should cope. In the meantime, the Treasury and the central bank have already taken small but significant steps to ease the pressure on the ruble. And don't forget, big foreign exchange and gold reserves, and of course, the rising price of oil, Russia's principal export, provides a major bulwark. Just look at one thing. 10-year government bond yields have hit 9% today. Even if you account for inflation, it's still one of the highest real rates of return in the world. And that's why sanctions have not triggered an exodus of foreign investors.
Something to keep watching. Thanks, Edward Evans in London. You can read more on these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion and on the Bloomberg Terminal by typing OPIN Go. Karen.
All right, thanks, Bob. It is 5:52 on Wall Street. It is time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
Trump administration officials have been hit with a class action lawsuit challenging the separation of more than 2,500 children from their parents while seeking asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border. Next week, the Senate will vote on a legislative package to fight the opioid crisis. The Opioid Crisis Response Act of 2018 includes a measure to help stop illegal drugs at the border. And sources tell Bloomberg the planned final release of a revamped Form W-4 employees withholding allowance certificate could be delayed a year.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, in other legal news, let's look at the Trump administration siding with Texas and 19 other states to challenge key parts of the Affordable Care Act. The White House took the unusual step of backing states in their fight against a federal government policy. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks with Timothy Jost, a professor at Washington and Lee School of Law.
Timothy, what's the legal argument of Texas and the coalition of states against the Affordable Care Act?
That the Supreme Court in 2012 held that Congress lacked the authority under the commerce power to adopt the individual mandate as a command or requirement, but that it could do it and did do it as a tax. However, in 2017, Congress repealed the tax penalty beginning in 2019, And therefore, Texas argues the individual mandate is now entirely unconstitutional, and the entire statute was built on the individual mandate, and therefore all 900 pages of the statute collapse.
What is your legal opinion of their argument?
It's absurd. And I think most legal experts who have looked at it agree with that in one way or another, including some people who, conservative legal scholars who have supported earlier challenges to the statute. I mean, it's flawed in many ways. The individual mandate at this point is not a command. The Supreme Court held that it wasn't. The tax has been zeroed out, but there are lots of taxes that are taxes that no one is paying right now that have zero, so it's still there on the books as a tax. But most importantly, when Congress repealed the or zeroed out the penalty in 2017, it had no intention of getting rid of the rest of the statute. It had already tried to get rid of some parts of the statute, and it failed, and numerous senators said, we are not doing anything here to change anything else in the statute. And so the judge should, a single judge in North Texas, should not rewrite the statute when Congress refused to do so.
That's Timothy Jost, a professor at Washington and Lee School of Law, speaking with Bloomberg's Drew Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. Bob.
At 5:56 on Wall Street, your Bloomberg ETF report is brought to you by Oppenheimer Funds. Challenge the status quo with ETFs that adapt monthly to an ever-changing world. Find out more at oppenheimerfunds.com/ETFs. And here is Bloomberg's Julie Hyman.
Fidelity recently made waves by unveiling a couple of zero-fee ETFs. How have they done? Pretty darn well. Eric Belchunas of Bloomberg Intelligence is here. So give us the numbers, Eric.
These have done very good. The two funds, right? Zero Total Market Index Fund, which is broad market U.S. stocks, and the Zero International Index Funds collectively gathered about $1 billion in their first month. That is pretty much unheard of. You're looking at a huge success. Now, remember, investors are cost obsessed. It's probably the most important trend of the last 5 years. And having zero fee is definitely going to attract investors because on the ETF side, we've seen for months and even years, about 80% of all the flows go to products that charge less than 20 basis points. And most of that money goes to products that charge less than 10. So if you're at zero, you're definitely right at the tip of the spear where all the money's going.
All right. I'm waiting to get paid to get some of these ETFs. Who knows? Maybe it's in the offing.
Probably 2020, 2021, I'm guessing. Yeah.
All right. That's a promise from Eric Belchunas with the Bloomberg ETF Report. I'm Julie Hyman.
All right, Julie, thank you. S&P futures are down about 6 points now. Dow futures down 56. NASDAQ futures down 19. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 2.88%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.